Welcome to today's reading of the Midland Reporter Telegram and the Odessa American, read by volunteers and staff. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
Hello, I'm Jesse. I'm reading from the Midland Reporter Telegram for Thursday, January 8th. Midland Sexual Assault Report Findings. Few indictments in adult cases. This story was written by B.K. Richter. Midland County Commissioners were informed Tuesday that the vast majority of adult sexual assault cases investigated over a two-year period did not result in indictments, according to a report by the Midland County Sexual Assault Response Team. Lee Ann McCombs, an adult service program director for the Midland Rape Crisis and Children's Advocacy Center, reported that there were 95 adult sexual assaults from 2023 to 2025, with only 6 indictments. Quote, "I don't know how many of y'all are familiar with what we do at the Midland Rape Crisis and Children's Advocacy Center," said McCombs, "but we are made up of representatives from the Midland County Sheriff's Office, the Midland Police Department, the Midland County District Attorney's Office, our staff, and also our SAR nurses from Midland Memorial Hospital," end quote. Additionally, McCombs told commissioners that a representative and investigator from the Upton County Sheriff's Office joined the SAR team. McCombs advised commissioners that the Texas Association Against Sexual Assault provides the parameters for what is included in the report. Quote, "One of the things that they want us to include is the number of sexual assault investigations from each law enforcement agency in the county, as well as the number of indictments we have during the reporting period. The reporting period is from September 2023 to August 2025, a 24-month period," end quote. McCombs told commissioners that TAASA wanted the SAR team to report the number of cases where there was an indictment and the number of cases where there was no indictment. Quote, "They also want us to include statistics from our center, such as the number of hospital accompaniments by a volunteer or a staff member and the number of sexual assault forensic exams, or SAFEs," she said. "The sexual assault forensic exams are done by our sexual assault nurse examiners, and then we report the number of clients served by our therapy department," end quote. For the Midland County Sheriff's Office, the SART data also reflects the lack of indictments. Quote, "There were 38 adult sexual assaults reported to the Midland County Sheriff's Office," said McCombs. "They did 38 investigations that resulted in 2 indictments, 32 cases where there was no indictment, and there are 4 active cases or cases that are still ongoing," end quote. McCombs also added that none of the rape kits, which were processed by hospital staff, were ever left at the hospital and were always picked up in a timely manner. Quote, "Not picking up rape kits has never happened with the Midland Police Department or with the Midland County Sheriff's Office detectives and investigators," she told commissioners. Additionally, McCombs cited Midland Memorial Hospital as conducting 100 adult SAFE exams, which were performed by the same 6 nurses. Quote, "They conducted more," she said. "I can say that because we are also a children's advocacy center, but these are the adult cases," end quote. McCombs said that the Midland Rape Crisis and Children's Advocacy Center staff provided hospital accompaniment for 96% of these exams, missing only 4 accompaniments over the 24-month period. Quote, the adult client advocate connected and supported, on average, 11 survivors per month, offering services such as safe exam accompaniment, follow-up calls, therapy referrals, support calls, and access to additional resources, she said. Despite operating with one therapist short, our therapy department continued to deliver consistent care, serving an average of 53 clients per month during the two-year period, end quote. Another requirement by TAASA, said McCombs, is a case review. Quote, we had to take one sexual assault from the time the assault was reported and track it all the way through, she said. We do that with all the cases, but we had to highlight one for TAASA, end quote. McCombs told commissioners that the case, which the SART team highlighted, showed how all the SART members worked together. However, she said Midland has a very low rate of continued connection with people who say they survived sexual assault. Quote, sometimes when we do a follow-up call, they don't answer the phone, she said. Sometimes our investigators and our detectives have a hard time getting a hold of them. And also, when the case gets to the district attorney's office and they send out the packet and everything, tell them survivors that the case is going forward, sometimes they disengage as well, end quote. McCombs said that sexual assault survivors often do not come right away to receive therapy services. Quote, they usually wait 3 to 5 years out from their victimization because it takes a long time for them to come forward and be ready to receive those services, she explained. McCombs said that sexual assault is one of the lowest reported crimes within the state of Texas and the U.S., but said that her agency is important in the purpose that it serves. Quote, what matters to us is that we help them heal after the assault, and so we are there for them no matter the outcome, but we are also there for them every step of the way from the beginning of the assault to the end, if it makes it all the way to court, she said. Commissioner Diane Anderson asked McCombs why the rate of indictments was low. Quote, sometimes it is because they don't respond, she said. Our society would love it to be a stranger who attacks somebody. It is usually somebody that they know and love and trust. A lot of times it is because they disengage, and a lot of times it is because there are no witnesses present, end quote. Additionally, McCombs said that often in such cases, it's her word versus his word, and it's hard to find evidence to go forward. Quote, our detectives and investigators will take the case to the grand jury because they believe the survivor, and they want the grand jury to decide, she said. And the grand jury will say, well, there's not a lot of evidence here. I don't know how we can take it to court, and if that's one of the reasons, because that's just not a lot of evidence, end quote. McCombs said that many people believe a rape kit shows that a rape occurred, but actually, as she explained to commissioners, it shows just the DNA results. Quote, if there are no witnesses, or they can't find, you know, anybody to corroborate the story, then they take his statement, and then the rape kit just shows that there was DNA, she explained. A lot of times, in 97% of the cases, there are no weapons used, and so it's like coercion or manipulation, you know, threats, things like that. And so they don't actually leave the evidence on the body, end quote. 17th Family seeks to join lawsuit. Alleged abuse of students with special needs. The story was written by Trevor Hawes, editor. A 17th family is seeking to join a civil lawsuit over the alleged abuse of students with special needs at South Elementary. If added, the number of children represented would rise to 18. On September 12th, a member of the district's Special Services Department reported to administration a concern related to classroom practices in a special needs classroom at South, according to a previous Reporter Telegram report. Shortly thereafter, 6 employees resigned, the principal was fired, and the assistant principal retired. In November, a 16th family sought to join the lawsuit, which was initially filed in the 441st District Court of the Honorable Jeff Robnett on September 24th. In seeking to join the lawsuit, the 17th family said in their filing that their 3-year-old child attended the Life Skills Program at South from September 1st through September 19th last year, the time period when the children in the lawsuit were allegedly subjected to neglect and abuse. Quote, after early childhood intervention testing revealed signs of autism, the child was recommended for enrollment in the Life Skills Program at South Elementary, the filing states. The child was subjected to abuse and neglect at the hands of the teachers and aides that the child's parents entrusted with his safety in the Life Skills Program, end quote. Security footage showed, in part, the 17th family's child being restrained in a chair for more than an hour and a half by Life Skills Program staff, and that the child fell over on his side while restrained, the filing said, adding that Midland ISD required parents to sign a nondisclosure agreement before allowing them to view footage of their children being abused. The plaintiffs alleged that their children were forcibly restrained in chairs or other devices for excessively extended periods of time, denied food and water during school hours, denied access to bathroom facilities, resulting in children being left in urine-soaked and feces-soiled clothing for extended periods, subjected to verbal abuse, humiliation, and mockery, subjected to physical abuse, suffered psychological trauma and fear, deprived of educational opportunities and basic human dignity. In addition to MISD, there are 6 named defendants, teachers Justin Butler and Heather Thomas, paraprofessionals Hilda Adamanwan, Kishla Colasso, Anavilia Enderby, and Jennifer Loving. The lawsuit also includes 2 John Doe and 2 Jane Doe defendants who are believed to be additional administrators or staff who knew of or observed the abuse yet failed to report it. The MISD Board of Trustees in October voted to fire South Principal Cynthia Rodriguez. MISD also announced shortly before this action that Assistant Principal Christy Tynes had retired. Blue Sand Project, bringing human trafficking awareness to Midland, Odessa. The story was written by Kesley Salinas. January is Human Trafficking Prevention Month, and the Midland Rape Crisis and Children's Advocacy Center, also known as MRCCAC, and Harmony Home, partnered to bring awareness to the issue across the Permian Basin. The MRCCAC and Harmony Home hosted a Blue Sand event, a symbolic awareness event honoring survivors of human trafficking and child exploitation. Blue Sand represents countless individuals affected by exploitation whose experiences are often unseen or misunderstood. Many community members joined the Blue Sand event, which was held at Oventiv. Midland County Sheriff David Kreiner started the event with an invocation. Featured speakers included Odessa Police Chief Michael Gerke, Amanda Allen with Harmony Home, Jared Fletcher with United Supermarkets, and Midland City Councilman John Burkholder. Brooke Manuel, Outreach Coordinator for the MRCCAC, read a speech written by Executive Director Pamela Hyde, who was unable to attend the event due to an emergency meeting. Quote, "Human trafficking is not a distant or abstract problem. It is occurring right here in the Permian Basin," Hyde's speech said. "Human trafficking involves the use of force, fraud, or coercion to obtain some type of commercial sex or labor," end quote. According to Hyde, Texas consistently ranks second in the nation for reported human trafficking cases in a single year. The National Human Trafficking Hotline received more than 2,400 reports from Texas, including over 600 directly from victims and survivors. Victims can include children and adults of all genders, often hidden in plain sight, Hyde said. She added that the numbers only represent a fraction of the true scope of the problem because trafficking is widely underreported. Quote, "Many times, it is very difficult for law enforcement to make trafficking cases," said Chief Gerke. "Victims and survivors have been told, 'You can't live without me, you can't exist without me, you're worthless, you need me.' And all these things make them afraid of the person controlling them, and they don't come to law enforcement," end quote. He added that many times traffickers are involved in other illicit activities, which is what they may be charged with instead of human trafficking. Quote, "Traffickers thrive in our willingness to be oblivious, to turn the other cheek and ignore the issue at hand," said Amanda Allen, Marketing Director of Harmony Home. "Please be the person that's willing to step up and step in if you do suspect trafficking. We want to remind you that it's not safe to approach the trafficker or victim yourself, so please don't do that, but call law enforcement, call the national hotline, and get those reports in," end quote. Allen added that bringing awareness to human trafficking doesn't just stop after this month, that it will continue throughout the year. Quote, "I encourage you to leave this room today fired up and ready to spread awareness for this issue year-round," she said. "If you see something, please say something. Traffickers rely on our silence, so if we can come together and share this message with others in our community, we can show traffickers that they are not welcome here in the Permian Basin," end quote. Texas Blue Sand Project. The Texas Blue Sand Project is a statewide initiative to raise awareness about human trafficking by symbolically filling sidewalk cracks with blue sand. Quote, "We spread blue sand in the cracks to signify that victims won't fall between the cracks in our community and that we have people that care enough to get them out of those situations," Allen said. Jared Fletcher, with United Supermarkets, said that they have been partnering with the Blue Sand Project in Lubbock for over 6 years now, and that this is the second year bringing the awareness project to Midland and the Permian Basin. He added that United Supermarket and Market Streets in Midland and Odessa will carry free blue sand in the stores. Anybody interested in participating in the awareness project can receive a bag of sand at the service counter. If you see signs of human trafficking, call 911 immediately to report it and be ready to give as many details as possible. You can make a report on iWatch Texas or call the National Human Trafficking Hotline at 888-373-7888 or text "Be Free" to 233-733. County Commissioners okay new road signs speed cut stop signs. The story was written by B.K. Richter. The Midland County Commissioners' Court met Tuesday and approved several agenda items. Here are the highlights from the meeting. Midland Crime Stoppers. Midland County Commissioners issued a formal proclamation to recognize the month of January as Crime Stoppers Month. Crime Stoppers of Midland was founded in January of 1984 as a nonprofit organization and has since helped law enforcement arrest more than 10,000 suspects, recover $3.6 million in stolen property, seize $6.3 million in narcotics, and pay out nearly $600,000 in rewards. Emergency Management Office. Commissioners received a report from Fire Marshal Justin Bunch regarding emergency and environmental management. The report included details on nearly 700 calls for service throughout the year, including incidents such as fires, environmental enforcement actions, traffic citations, arson investigations, and much more. The department also helps to discard of items such as tires and batteries, conducts safety training sessions for the public and private sectors, and conducts routine inspections. Public Works. The court approved a design for new street signs to differentiate between county-maintained and privately maintained roads. Concerns were raised because in some cases, roads may be privately maintained but are still open to the public, which has caused confusion. In order to more clearly identify which roads are maintained by the county, new blue signs will feature the county logo. County officials said these new signs will be installed as needed to provide clarity. Additionally, commissioners conducted several public hearings regarding the Road and Bridge Department. The court voted to add no parking signs along West County Road 125 between State Highway 349 and South County Road 1200, and to decrease the speed limit on the same stretch of road from 40 miles per hour to 30 miles per hour. Commissioners also approved the installation of permanent stop signs at the intersections of East County Road 150 and South County Road 1160 and South County Road 1136 and East County Road 190. Next meeting. The next regularly scheduled Commissioners' Court will be held January 20th. Meetings are held in the Commissioners' Court on the first floor of the Midland County Courthouse, located at 500 North Lorraine Street. The meeting is live-streamed via the county's website, co.midland.tx.us. Midland Police Department to roll out electric bikes for its officers. The story was written by Luke Diaz. The Midland Police Department has announced that its officers will begin utilizing electric bicycles, or e-bikes, in what they are calling the bike unit. The e-bikes will serve as vehicles to assist with additional mobility and security for officers. Quote, "This helps the city be a lot safer and a lot more secure because it allows us to do things that we wouldn't otherwise be able to do," Shane Blanford, an MPD officer, said in a promotional video on the City of Midland's social media pages. Quote, "On foot, you can only move so fast. On a bike, you can move twice that speed, if not three times that speed. And a car is too big. They can't go places a bike can go," end quote. E-bikes are bicycles with a built-in electric motor, which grants the rider a propulsion boost of up to 28 miles per hour total, though they will still need to pedal. The use and functionality of e-bikes has increased continuously over the years, particularly in urban areas. As described in the video, the e-bikes are intended by MPD partly to be a further deterrent against vehicle burglaries. They will also be used for patrolling high population areas and events such as Midland's holiday season. MPD says they are currently training MPD officers on the e-bikes and hope to roll out the bike unit later this year. Here is an obituary that appeared in the Midland Reporter-Telegram on Thursday, January 8th. Jose Luis Gardea, age 76, of Midland, died Monday, January 5th, in Midland. Celebration of Life will be held at 3 p.m. on January 10th at Kingdom Hall of Jehovah's Witnesses, 5100 North Lamesa Road, Hall 1, Midland, Texas, 79705. Visitation will take place January 9th from 4 to 8 p.m. at American Heritage Funeral Home. Arrangements are by American Heritage Cemetery Funeral Home Crematory of Midland.
This is the Midland Reporter-Telegram Health and Wellness for Wednesday, January 7th, 2026. Midland Memorial Hospital. Nurse Haley MacLeod wins DAISY Award. In a heartfelt ceremony on the post-surgical unit, Midland Memorial Hospital celebrated one of its own, Nurse Haley MacLeod, with the DAISY Award for Extraordinary Nurses. The award, a nationally recognized honor, was presented to Haley for her fierce patient advocacy and the profound impact she has on those in her care, especially those unable to speak for themselves. Kit Bredemus, Chief Nursing Officer and Vice President at the hospital, led the surprise presentation, emphasizing the significance of the award. Quote, "The DAISY Award is the most recognized nursing award in the country and across the globe," end quote, Bredemus stated. Quote, "We are so proud to be on PSU today to give out our award," end quote. The nomination, read aloud during the ceremony, came from MacLeod's former unit manager, Glenna Andress. It painted a vivid picture of a nurse who consistently goes above and beyond. The letter detailed multiple instances of MacLeod's exceptional care, highlighting her dedication to her patients who are often overlooked. One powerful story shared how MacLeod cared for a minimally responsive patient with no family support. Quote, "Haley did not just care for her, she advocated for her at every stage," end quote, the nomination read. Quote, "She took the extra time to assess her thoroughly, ensuring even her unspoken needs were met. It was clear she saw not just a patient, but a person," end quote. The nomination also praised MacLeod's courage in connecting with challenging patients. She willingly cared for a patient who engaged in self-harming behaviors, seeking to understand the needs beyond medical intervention. Another account described her gentle approach with a patient prone to violent tendencies, using simple conversation about their favorite meal to de-escalate a potentially confrontational moment. Quote, "You can teach nursing skills, but you can't teach art, and Haley has that in abundance," end quote, concluded the nomination letter. Quote, "She is exactly what the DAISY Award represents," end quote. Visibly moved by the tribute, MacLeod shared her perspective. Quote, "I feel like it was true what she said," end quote, she explained, holding back tears. Quote, "The patients that deserve the most of my care are people who can't sit down and write it out, so it was just nice to be recognized," end quote. As part of the honor, MacLeod received a certificate, a DAISY Award winner's pin, and the, quote, "Healer's Touch," end quote, statue, a hand-carved sculpture from Zimbabwe. In a tradition unique to the DAISY Foundation, the celebration also included cinnamon rolls from Cinnabon for the entire unit, honoring Patrick Barnes, the man whose memory inspired the award. Midland Memorial Hospital continues its partnership with the DAISY Foundation to highlight the remarkable work its nurses do every day. The ceremony for MacLeod serves as a powerful reminder of the profound difference one dedicated professional can make in the lives of patients and their families. The hospital looks forward to celebrating another deserving nurse next month. To nominate a nurse for the DAISY Award, visit midlandhealth.org/main/DAISY-award-nomination-form. Home maintenance. Why home maintenance deserves a spot in health plans. Many people start the new year thinking about ways to improve their health, be more organized, and manage their finances. Experts say there is one area that touches on each of those resolutions: home care. Early and routine home maintenance goes beyond fixing visible damage. It helps ensure a healthy living environment, extends the life of a home, and can protect its long-term value, according to Real real estate professionals. Planning ahead for regular upkeep and for unexpected emergencies can reduce the risk of costly repairs later and help spread expenses more evenly throughout the year. According to research by the U.S. Department of Energy and the Environmental Protection Agency, about three-quarters of existing homes are expected to still be in use in 2050. Quote, maintaining the homes that we have is really essential to protecting our health and our well-being, end quote, said Amanda Reddy, executive director of the National Center for Healthy Housing, an organization that researches and advocates for reducing housing-related health disparities. Despite who owns the property, Reddy said, keeping residences dry, clean, and pest-free, well-ventilated, and safe is the goal, which can mean different types of maintenance depending on the type of home, where someone lives, and the time of year. Here's what experts say about home care and what tasks to put on the checklist this year. Home care includes the big projects and the everyday decisions. On average, Americans spend about 90% of their time indoors, 70% of that time inside of a residence, according to the National Human Activity Pattern Survey. Quote, it's not just that we spend time indoors, but at home. If you are older, very young, have health concerns, or work from home, it is likely more than that, end quote, Reddy said, emphasizing the reason why home care is a valuable investment. What many people think of maintenance includes addressing water and gas leaks, pest infestations, cracks, and other major repairs. But home builders say not everything needs a professional and can include actions as simple as wiping counters and sweeping floors of food debris, opening windows for better ventilation, or clearing out clogged filters and drains. Residents should also consider the needs of those living in the home, commonly used spaces such as kitchens, bathrooms, and bedrooms, and typically neglected areas like attics and basements. Reddy says, quote, anywhere we're spending time, end quote, or often ignoring and possibly missing necessary repairs should be prioritized. Quote, at the end of the day, doing any preventative maintenance at all matters more than doing it perfectly or at exactly the right time, end quote, Reddy said. Quote, but timing can make a big difference. A lot of these tasks are seasonal or annual, and you're not just going to do it one time. Homes are stressed differently by different times of the year, so seasonal maintenance helps us catch problems before they're made worse by environmental stressors, end quote. Seasonal maintenance to plan for throughout the year. When it comes to maintenance, planning and preparing for anticipated and routine changes in the environment can help mitigate natural wear and tear on the exterior of homes and also create healthy conditions inside, where most people shelter from extreme weather events. Quote, what happens outside the house rarely stays outside the house. What's outside gets inside, what's inside builds up, end quote, Reddy said, adding that fluctuating outdoor conditions put stress on appliances and systems at different times of the year. Quote, for most people, the seasonal rhythm not only makes sense because of those stressors, it also just is more realistic and effective than trying to tackle a long, overwhelming checklist all at once, end quote. For example, experts say the best time to prepare for cold and wet climate, storms, and other natural disasters is to address concerns before temperatures drop. Similarly, it is recommended that residents address systems and homes that work to reduce the effects of extreme high temperatures, dry and drought conditions, and associated risks like wildfires and air quality in the off-season. Professional guidance from home inspectors, builders, and real estate agents says spring and summer tasks should focus on preparing for warmer weather. Experts recommend checking air conditioning systems, cleaning dryer vents to prevent fire hazards, testing sprinkler systems, tending to gardens and plants around homes' exterior, and inspecting appliances, electrical equipment, and plumbing fixtures. Experts also say spring is a good time to clean and do any house projects that involve painting or remodeling, since rain is unlikely to cause delays during that time. In the fall and winter months, experts suggest focusing on temperatures, control, and air quality measures as people tend to shelter indoors during incoming colder weather. American Home Inspectors training guidance says, check heating systems, clean air filters, make sure carbon monoxide detectors are working, seal air leaks, prioritize pest control, clean and repair roofs and chimneys, and inspecting drainage options in and around homes. Mayo Clinic Q&A. What are prebiotics and probiotics? Dear Mayo Clinic, I'm confused about prebiotics and probiotics. Could you help me understand what they are and how they could benefit my health? Answer. You're not alone in wondering about the health benefits of prebiotics and probiotics. Even the names can be confusing. The human gastrointestinal tract houses roughly 100 trillion microorganisms, good bacteria, These microorganisms make up what's called the gut microbiome. These good bacteria fight off bad bacteria to help keep our intestinal tract healthy. Probiotics, promoting digestion, benefiting health. Let's start with probiotics. Probiotics are living organisms, also known as microbes. They're primarily bacteria and yeast whose main role is to aid digestion and improve overall health. Probiotics help strengthen the gut barrier, aid in the absorption of nutrients, and replace less beneficial or harmful microbes. Research shows that probiotics can treat and even prevent conditions such as gastrointestinal, GI, tract infections, irritable bowel syndrome, IBS, lactose intolerance, allergies, cystic fibrosis, urogenital infections, diarrhea, high cholesterol, eczema, and certain cancers. Probiotics also may support dental health by treating and preventing tooth decay, periodontal disease, and bad breath. In addition to aiding digestion, another essential role of probiotics is promoting a healthy immune system and preventing chronic diseases. A set of fermented foods. Some examples of probiotics include fermented foods such as certain yogurts, many cheeses, pickled vegetables, apple cider vinegar, fermented teas, and sauerkraut. Probiotic supplements also are available in pill or powder form. Prebiotics, feeding probiotics. Prebiotics are the food for probiotics. They help feed the probiotics through fermentation and metabolization, which are beneficial to the gut. These microorganisms contribute to a variety of processes, including cell energy, immune function, hormone regulation, anti-inflammatory responses, and bowel management. Research indicates that high prebiotic consumption may enhance our immune system, help regulate blood sugar levels, reduce the risk of colorectal cancer, and increase calcium absorption. When good bacteria, probiotics, are fed an abundance of healthful food, prebiotics, our bodies will be healthier. Prebiotics are found in foods that contain dietary fibers, which the body doesn't fully digest, resistant starches, which are a form of carbohydrate that isn't digested in the small intestine. Instead, it ferments in the large intestine. A variety of fruits, vegetables, and fibrous foods containing prebiotics. The most common prebiotics are inulin, oligosaccharides, and pectin, which are found in fibrous foods. Foods containing prebiotics include most fruits and vegetables, especially green bananas, asparagus, and onions, as well as garlic, nuts, seeds, oats, barley, potatoes, and legumes such as soybeans, dried beans, peas, and lentils. Adding probiotics and prebiotics to your diet. Food composition changes with cooking, so to get the most benefit from prebiotics and probiotics, it's important to pay attention to cooking methods. For example, boiling potatoes is better than baking them. When potatoes are boiled and then chilled, they develop a white, starchy film, which is the most beneficial part. Serving beans and legumes hot increases their starch content, which is good for your gut. Eating most fruits and vegetables while they are fresh and raw will provide healthful prebiotics. Researchers suggest gradually introducing these foods into your diet. Adding a lot of new foods containing prebiotics and probiotics may produce gas, cause bloating, and lead to gut discomfort. Cancer. Colon cancer rates spiking among young people. Dr. Bethany Malone has treated a lot of colorectal cancer patients. The youngest, not counting those with genetic conditions, was 19 years old. Colorectal cancer used to be considered a cancer of older age, not anymore. Patients in their teens and early 20s still aren't the norm exactly, but are becoming more common. Quote, I have not gone a year in practice without taking a colon cancer out of someone in their 20s, end quote, Malone said. Malone is a colon and rectal surgeon and the associate program director for the general surgery residency at Texas Health Harris Methodist Hospital, Fort Worth. Her experience in Texas reflects a worldwide trend. Colorectal cancer, which includes cancer of the colon and of the rectum, is considered early onset when diagnosed in people under the age of 50. While the majority of diagnoses are still among people aged 65 or older, early onset rates have been increasing worldwide, particularly in high-income countries. In a 2023 report, the American Cancer Society wrote that the trends of decreasing incidence in older people and increasing incidence in younger people are, quote, rapidly shifting the patient population younger, end quote. In 2020, Black Panther actor Chadwick Boseman died from colon cancer at age 43. More recently, former Dallas Cowboys cheerleaders choreographer Chrisilla Anderson died of colon cancer at age 45. Also locally, Dallas musician Joshua Ray Walker was diagnosed with colon cancer in late 2023 at age 33. About 10 months later, after treatment and surgery, he announced that he was cancer-free. Here's what medical experts say about the rising rates of colorectal cancer in younger people. Why are colorectal cancer rates rising among younger people? Medical experts say there isn't one reason why colorectal cancer rates are rising in the below 50 age groups, but there are some contributing factors. First, it's not because of genetics. Dr. Radhika Kamthula, a medical oncologist at Parkland Memorial Hospital in Dallas, said that about 20% of early-onset colorectal cancer patients have a genetic tie-in. That means 80% do not. Quote, there's a misconception a lot of times that if it's a younger person being diagnosed with cancer, it must be genetic, end quote, Kamthula said. Quote, but that's not actually what we're seeing, end quote. All three experts who spoke with the Dallas Morning News pointed instead to a combination of environmental factors and lifestyle factors, such as diets high in red meat, diets packed with ultra-processed foods, and lack of regular exercise. Malone at Texas Health Fort Worth said fiber intake especially tends to be low for Americans, which can increase the risk for colorectal cancer. Fiber does a lot of work in the gut, Malone said, including feeding a healthy microbiome and helping to flush carcinogens out of the body before they're absorbed. Malone noted that the, quote, lifestyle, end quote, factors are not always easily controllable. The U.S. food system has shifted significantly toward ultra-processed foods, which tend to be low in necessary nutrients such as fiber. There are also environmental factors at play, said Dr. Emina Huang, a professor of surgery and a colorectal surgeon at UT Southwestern Medical Center. For instance, living near a Superfund site, which are hazardous waste sites, has been shown to increase the risk of cancer. How do I reduce my risk of colorectal cancer? Reducing the risk of colorectal cancer, the three experts said, comes down to a lot of the standard advice that medical professionals recommend for general health, too. The three experts said that folks should focus on getting regular exercise, avoiding smoking, moderating alcohol intake, and eating a diet that's low in red meat but rich in fruits, vegetables, and fiber. Obesity is also a risk factor for colorectal cancer, the experts said, although Malone cautioned against focusing on weight loss alone. Restrictive diets may also end up being low in fiber, which is harmful rather than helpful for colorectal cancer risk. And of course, patients should pay attention to their bodies and seek medical care if they notice abdominal pain or changes in their bowel movements. When should I start getting screened for colorectal cancer? Because of the rising rates of colorectal cancer among younger people, the U.S. Preventive Services Task Force advises regular screenings begin at age 45. The gold standard of screening is a colonoscopy, but stool tests and scans can also be used for screening. The age 45 recommendation, however, is for patients who have a standard risk for colorectal cancer. Some people may be at a higher risk due to personal or family history. People with a first-degree relative, a sibling, parent, or child diagnosed with colorectal cancer or colorectal polyps may be advised to begin screenings at a younger age. In general, medical professionals advise beginning screening when a patient is 10 years younger than their relative was at the age of diagnosis. For instance, if your father was diagnosed with colorectal cancer at age 48, you should begin screenings at age 38. Patients with such a family history should start screenings no later than 40. Similarly, patients who have personal histories of Crohn's disease or ulcerative colitis are at higher risk of colorectal cancer, too, and should also begin screenings at an earlier age. Kamthula at Parkland also noted that there are other types of screenings besides colonoscopies, such as blood tests and stool tests, that may be a useful option for some patients. What are the warning signs of colorectal cancer? Medical experts are quick to point out that for most young people, abdominal or gastrointestinal symptoms are unlikely to indicate colorectal cancer. Still, some symptoms should serve as red flags. The most common early symptoms are stomach pain that doesn't go away, changes in bowel movements with no improvement, or blood in the stool. Sometimes these symptoms can indicate hemorrhoids or other relatively benign conditions. However, if a patient is treated for a benign condition but symptoms do not improve, that's a sign that something more may be going on.
Hi, this is Linda. I'm reading the Odessa American for Saturday, December 13th, 2025. Religion. A Divided Heart Lives in Denial and Deception by William F. Holland, Jr., Ph.D., ordained and licensed Christian minister. I'm reminded again of the quote from Scott Fitzgerald, "You do not write because you want to say something. You write because you have something to say." I can relate to those who are called to express the burdens within their hearts and thankful for the opportunity to share mine. These freedoms may not always be with us as the world is becoming aggressively opposed to God and his disciples. I write for many secular publications around the country, and I'm often warned about toning it down with Jesus as it might offend those who disagree. I'm an editor and contributor for a couple of magazines and was told the other day that my Christmas article was not family friendly. Too much Jesus. I often wonder if compromising would be better than having no platform at all, but at what point do we draw the line? The Living on Purpose column is recognized as a source of encouragement and faith. Nevertheless, as a watchman, I must never ignore his warnings. Pastors and teachers will agree it's easier to talk about doctrines and biblical history, but it's a solemn responsibility and personal sacrifice to deliver a specific and urgent message from God himself. In the Bible, when he would choose a servant that he could trust, often their obedience brought persecution, and for some, it cost them their lives. This is happening right now. I'm referring to those few individuals who are not afraid to speak divine truth about sin, even if they are silenced with force. The religious fluff will continue adapting and ignoring as a part of their self-preservation. But sadly, this fear of offending is causing many churches to reconsider their stand against sin as a solution to maintaining financial success. Along with most modern assemblies reinviting themselves, we notice a decline in the promotion of prayer. Why is this? Because the masses would rather be cozy and comfortable, to be entertained, and listen to short, feel-good devotions that are non-threatening. Spiritual warfare and serious prayer does not fit into this format, even though intercession generates the power of the Holy Spirit's presence in the services and increases discernment, anointing, and maturity. When prayer was removed from the public education system, the enemy won a major battle. But why do we not hear more about how the absence of a praying church has caused a spiritually powerless nation? One reason is the average religious person only calls for prayer is when they need something. If a prayer was a top priority of Christians, it would change the world. How often are we desperate for God? Do we anticipate him whispering for us to go somewhere private and seek him? I realize I talk about surrendering our will all the time, but I do not apologize, as it is the key to accomplishing his. Our free will is the command center within the human experience that has everything to do with our spiritual connection with our Creator. Until the Word of God convicts our will and mind, and then we obey His demands, how can we be transformed into His image? If we choose to fill our minds with the distractions of the world, we will not be convicted to pray or have a passion to walk in the awareness of his presence. So why is the reverential fear of the Lord hardly mentioned anymore? Because the masses do not want to hear that lukewarmness is a result of being filled with more of the world than the Holy Spirit. We are what we think, and when we refuse to protect our conscience, it becomes contaminated. When pleasure becomes more important than pleasing God, our dirty heart separates us from Him. However, if we allow God to purify us with His refining fire, there is no way we can continue being a hypocritical facade. We have two choices: continue pledging allegiance to the darkness, or become a living sacrifice for Christ. We can't love two masters at the same time, and being neutral is automatically serving the darkness. Beyond the motivational talks and inspirational stories, we must own all aspects of truth. We must demonstrate what we confess. If we really want to be holy, the only person stopping us is us. We've heard about being born again, but when a person accepts Christ as their Savior and Lord, they no longer live for themselves. All control has been given over to their new master, and to continue living exactly the same after we make our holy vow to Jesus is a fraud, denial, and a deception. To learn more about the Christian life, visit BillyHollandMinistries.com. Features from the Bible. Truth in Scripture. Joab murders Abner, from 2 Samuel chapter 3. Ishbosheth, Saul's son, accused Abner, the military commander of Saul's army, of sleeping with one of his father's concubines. Abner was angered at the accusation and moved to David's army, promising to bring all of Israel over to David. Joab, commander of David's army, returned from a raid and learned that Abner had come over to serve David. He was not pleased. Jacob sent for Abner to meet him. When Abner arrived, Joab took him aside as though to speak with him privately. To avenge the blood of his brother, who Abner had killed with the butt of his spear, Joab stabbed Abner in the stomach, and Abner died. Hearing of Abner's death, David proclaimed, "May his blood fall upon the head of Joab and upon all his father's house. May Joab's house never be without someone who has a running sore or leprosy, or who leans on a crutch, or who falls by the sword, or who lacks food."
Here is the Dear Abby column that appeared in the Midland Reporter Telegram on Thursday, January 8th. Relative isn't picking up on the message being sent. Dear Abby, my husband is battling cancer. He has good days and bad days. He is not at the end, but he can no longer do a lot of things for himself. At this point, we are very busy with doctors and treatments. We have 14 medical treatments this month alone. His children want to visit from out of town frequently. Of course, they want to see their dad, and I understand. However, how can I moderate the visits graciously without discouraging them so the additional responsibilities don't wear me out? I have tried setting some limits, and some of them pay attention to what I say. However, one child, age 50, doesn't listen. They come to town and want to spend all day with Dad. I have to provide meals, snacks, beverages, and attempt to monitor my husband's rest time as well as my own. I have tried limiting the number of days, but I am ignored. The last time, my husband and I suggested 4 days instead of 7, but we were ignored. Now this child wants to come for a month. Help, please. Signed, Caretaker in Utah. Dear Caretaker, that this child would ignore not only your wishes, but also their father's, is terrible. I'm sorry you didn't mention where this person stays when they visit, but it should not be in your home. They should stay at a hotel or motel, and they, not you, should be responsible for their meals. Your husband can help with this to some degree. When he's tired and needs to rest, he should be willing to tell his child it's time to go. This child should also be willing to lend a hand wherever it's needed, including shopping for groceries, doing laundry, and taking Dad to medical appointments so you can rest. Drawing the line isn't easy, but once it's done, you will both be glad you did. Dear Abby, my mother loves exchanging gifts and spends a lot of time and energy choosing and elaborately wrapping items for all the members of our family. She's also retired and living on a limited fixed income. She showers me and my kids with expensive things at holidays, but then almost immediately hits me up for cash because she's broke. I've gotten into the habit of returning as many of her gifts as I can and banking the money for when she needs it back. She found me out and gets really angry when I do this. At the same time, she's unwilling to scale back her spending. She sees these as completely separate issues. I can't refuse her the money because she wouldn't be able to pay for rent or groceries. How do I get her to understand that the most precious gift she could give would be to stay within her means, and I'd rather not have to pay her back for things she buys us? Signed, No More Gifts. Dear No More, if telling your mother to stop giving you gifts has been unsuccessful, you are not going to change her. This is who she is. Accept that. My recommendation would be to continue dealing with this issue as you have, regardless of the inconvenience, and suggest to your mother that, if she is able, she should look for a part-time job so she will have more disposable income. Dear Abby is written by Abigail Van Buren, also known as Jean Phillips, and was founded by her mother, Pauline Phillips. Contact Dear Abby at www.dearabby.com or Post Office Box 69440, Los Angeles, California, 90069.
Thank you for joining us for the readings of the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American. This is the Recording Library of West Texas, enriching the lives of individuals with physical, visual, and learning disabilities since 1963. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand with your computer or favorite mobile device at recordinglibrary.org.